Hi, and welcome back to episode 6 of the Flying Dogs podcast. I'm Nikki.
And I'm Jo, or I was last time I checked.
Jo, the Mayor of Colwyn Bay.
Bay of Colwyn Town Council. So the Bay of Colwyn covers all Colwyn, Colwyn Bay and Rosenstein.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. So is Colwyn Bay, it's like, well, I don't get it.
Yeah, it's just the Bay of Colwyn, that's what it covers, those three areas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, and nice. Colwyn Heights.
So I guess Colwyn Heights, Old Colwyn, Colwyn Bay.
Rosenstein. Yeah.
Nice.
It's going to be a busy year.
It is going to be a busy year, as long as it doesn't interfere with flyball.
Hopefully it won't.
Then you're allowed to do it, and we will give you permission to do it. But it was, you were inaugurated, weren't you, on Monday?
I was on Monday, yeah. Some of the pictures I'm not really happy with. But
why? I thought you looked amazing.
Yeah, my gums look really red.
Did they?
I wish you did.
That's possibly because you were wearing a red frock.
Maybe. Yeah.
So.
But yeah.
I thought you looked ace.
Thanks. It was very hot.
It was hot, wasn't it?
Very hot.
It was super hot.
Yeah.
But yes. So we now have a mayor on our team. She was a mayor beforehand. Now she's
officially a mayor.
Yeah. She's. Oh, you three types of mayor.
Am I?
Moody mayor. A nightmare. And a town mayor. Oh no, I'll take the moody mayor. I'll take the moody mayor crown. You can just be the nightmare.
Nightmare and town mayor.
Yeah. Nightmare and town mayor, yes. Yes.
Yeah, no, it was a good night. It was. I was surprisingly not nervous until I got there. But Tina, the clerk, she was so good in preparing everything, so it made it a lot easier.
Is that the one who was sat on your right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's very good.
Yeah. She seemed really nice.
Yeah. Yeah, we're lucky to have her.
Yes, yes. This episode, getting back to flyball rather than mayorship, because that is going to, you know, you are going to, well, I know, we can have a picture of you in your mayor cape and...
Cape?
Well, what is it called?
Robes.
Oh, it's like Superman. So your mayor robes, we could have a picture of that. Jesus,
that'd be lovely. That, yeah.
Consider it done. consider it done. I shall be doing that. But yeah, so this episode 6, we're going to interview a renowned trainer, and she is called Vicky Ogden. Door.
She is.
Yes, we've married her, unmarried her, yeah. Killed off her husband, brought him back to life. And so Vicky Ogden Door, she is a phenomenal trainer. About as experienced in flyball, I think, as you can get, I would think.
Yeah, yeah. And then when you listen to her story on the next part of the podcast, it's an eye opener, isn't it? She's she's come a long way. She's cracking team, and the team have come a long way as well.
Storm Chasers.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. But it was interesting, which you'll obviously hear now, interesting to see her journey through flyball.
Yeah.
Which there's lots of links to existing teams now. So obviously she talked about with Christina and Cheshire Set. But it's really interesting. And like you say, the development of it, of flyball throughout the years, which she does allude to. But also one of the things we wanted to do was ask her about a question that Lottie asked the podcast about ages of what age you start flyball training your dog and what do you do. So so without further ado, we shall move over to the interview with Vicky, which we hope you'll enjoy, and we absolutely know you or anyone listening is going to get an awful lot out of.
And I think listen to the interview and it sparks any questions. Just messages, we can get them to Vicky and she'll answer.
Yes, because Vicky has also said as well she'd be more than willing to come back and speak to us again, which would be phenomenal. Because like I say, she is a brilliant trainer with regards. She doesn't just focus on flyball either. She's great at obedience and general dog behaviour and animal behaviour, isn't she? So there's not a great deal that she doesn't know.
No, and is very generous with her knowledge, as are a lot of the trainers, aren't they?
Oh, they are, yeah.
Yeah, all very, very good.
Yes, definitely. So over to the interview with Vicky.
So today we are interviewing a renowned trainer. Renowned trainer, Vicky Ogdendore. We've unmarried you and now we've remarried you.
Good to know, good to know.
Well, yeah, Daryl
will be happy.
Yes. So, yeah, Vicky Ogdendore, and you're based with Storm Chasers Flyball Team, aren't you? So where do you train?
We train in Littleborough, which is Rochdale.
Okay. Yeah. Ah, excellent. Because we know, because you hold your competitions in Oswestry.
Yes.
But we were like, do they train in Oswestry or do they train somewhere
else? No, we used to come and train here, like, relatively often. But now we've got the barn at the farm.
Okay.
So we train there, basically. So we don't really use this to train anymore at all, which is sort of sad because it's so nice and big and everything. But
it is. It's lovely.
It's also, it's not massively expensive, but obviously it's a lot more expensive than training at home.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, definitely. So how did you get started in flyball?
That was the Rottweilers. That was our Rots Honey and Cane, which you guys, I don't think, have ever met. You've never had the pleasure.
No, we haven't, no.
I think they are quite well known on the circuit, or were in their day. So we had two Rotties, Honey and Cane. And I was like, right, you know, these are going to be like the best behaved Rottweilers you've ever come across. Because me and Daryl both had Rotties previously to meeting each other.
Okay.
So one of the sort of prereqs, so I, going up a slight backstory, I moved in with Daryl as his lodger. And that's how we met.
Oh, really?
And I'd said to him, look, you know, I really want to move in and stuff. And it's all great. I said, but I really, really want a dog. How do you feel about me getting a dog? He's like, well, what sort of dog do you want? I said, well, it'll either be a Rottie or a Dobie. He went, Rottie, and we're good. So I was okay, cool.
And so you didn't have a dog before that?
I'd had a dog before that.
Right.
I'd had, it was somebody else that I was with for many years. We had a Rottweiler together.
Okay.
And Daryl had had two Rottweilers as he was growing up.
Right. So you both knew how to handle Rottweilers.
Yeah. And I was like, right, these are going to be like the best behaved Rottweilers you've ever come across. They're going to be so well behaved. They're going to be so gentle. They're going to be so brilliant. They're going to be like ambassadors for their breed, which they were. And funnily enough, so I went looking for training classes, and I went to Christina Offerman's training classes.
Oh, really?
All the way back in 2008.
Wow.
Was when we started her classes. And so sort of, I don't know, maybe halfway through the first course, like obviously I was doing loads of homework with the dogs and they were like smashing all the way all through the classes, doing everything perfectly, getting top marks and everything. She's like, and I said, like, I fancy doing some sort of work with them rather than just the basic training. I want to do maybe a bit of sport or a bit of agility, or, you know, I don't know what, but something. She's like, would you fancy trying flyball? I'm like, I think I've seen that at Crafts. And I was like, yeah, maybe, it's, you know, I don't mind, I'll give it a bash. And she said there was a show on at Cheshire Set, their showground at Ryecroft Farm at the time. That was an outdoor show. Come along and have a look. So, yeah, we went and had a look, and I was like, nobody really explained what was going on. It just looked a bit mental, really. So I was like, yeah, fine, you know, we'll give it a go. And obviously Christina had, she was with Cheshire Set at the time. Yeah, so it was Cheshire Set was where we first started.
Okay.
And it was just
and
Honey.
And so Christina ran Cheshire Set?
No, she was with Cheshire Set.
Oh, she was with Cheshire Set.
She was with Cheshire Set.
Oh, okay, interesting. And then you joined Cheshire Set?
Yeah, so with just Honey. Because Daryl wasn't doing it, because it was Kane's far too manly of a dog to play this silly looking game. So Honey started training, started picking up really well. And I think she did her first competition, a starters competition. And obviously Kane was there all the way through. And he's watching at the sidelines and bouncing up and down. And Daryl's like, I think he actually really wants to have a go.
Yeah.
So then we started training Kane. So yeah.
Okay. And that's how you both then got into flyball.
That's how we got into flyball, yeah.
Okay, and at what point did you then set up Storm Chasers? Because was it already an established club before you joined?
No, it was all ours. So we did Cheshire Set, then we went and Christina set her own team up, so we went to hers, and that was called All Stars.
Okay.
And then we left Christina, so we stayed with her for about 6 months, and then we got really friendly with a team, which again, you guys won't know, called Rotherham Rockets, run by Andy and Sam James.
Okay.
And obviously we got really friendly with them, so we were like, actually, we'd probably quite like to join your team. And we were with them for about 3 years, and I was doing the majority of their training. They wanted me to do their training, like I was learning more and more. I've been to seminars, Rocket Relay, Touch and Go, and Pam Martin. and learned a fair bit, and I was doing more and more of their training and starting to teach the young dogs. And I guess just sort of got to the point where I was like, actually, if I'm going to be doing all the training, I might as well take all the credit for it as well and set my own team up.
That's very true, yeah.
So yeah, so 2011.
Okay.
That's when Storm Chasers was set up.
Nice. So did you and Daryl set it up together?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Ah. So you mentioned the fact then that you became a flyball trainer then?
Just for that, for Rotherham's team, yeah. So yeah. We were just, you know, your bog standard members, but there were things that people would struggle with that I would say, well, I've got an idea that I can help you with this. And like 99% of the time it would work.
Yeah.
So then basically I started doing all the young dogs. I would teach them the ABCs basically.
Okay. So how do you start then a brand new flyball? So what age do you think is the best age to start a flyball dog?
As soon as you get them.
As an 8 week old puppy.
Yeah. Yeah. So if I've bred a litter, I'll start tuggy work with them when they're 4 or 5 weeks old.
Okay.
So that's the first thing, is creating some drive, ideally tuggy drive, because that's mm-hmm. the easiest one and generally quite high drive toy. But yeah, anybody else who's coming along, if they're getting a brand new baby or if I'm getting a brand new baby, 8 weeks old, they'll start doing tuggy work and short recalls and fun games and being handled by different people, taking treats off different people, playing puppy ping pong. So puppy's here and it goes to that person and gets a treat or a toy. Then it goes to that person and it just like pings around basically.
Okay, well, that's interesting. And then that, I guess, gets the puppy used to being handled by different people in different environments and taking treats. Because very often in flyball, somebody else has to hold your dog or run your dog or whatever. And especially like you're the trainer.
Yeah, this is why I have a problem with my dogs, because I don't give my dogs to enough other people, and then a lot of my dogs are really, really clingy with me.
Okay.
So then I have this problem of going, I've not handed this dog over enough to somebody else, whereas everyone else's dogs, I sort of handle other people's dogs, so all the dogs will pretty much run for me.
But your dogs won't.
My dogs don't sometimes run for anybody else.
So you're almost a victim of your own success there as well, aren't you?
Yes, because I just forget. It's like quick now, my youngest. I keep thinking, I need to give her to Ryan or Alicia or whatever to send up and down the lane to do this with, to do that with. And I end up getting so engrossed in what I'm doing, I forget.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you've ended up running your dog for the whole time.
Yeah.
And not done anything. So how would your approach then vary if you had an older dog join the team? What would you be doing with an older dog?
Again, so you'd be starting off with drive, motivation.
Okay.
What makes this dog tick? What makes this dog really, really happy? What gives this dog a boost to run that little bit faster? So if it's not obvious, then I've got like a massive bucket of tugs and different balls, different textures, rabbit fur, sheep fur, the sort of Hessian type tugs, you name it, the squeaky, not squeaky, soft, rubbery, every single different type of texture, because dogs do tend to have a preference.
Yeah.
And when you find the thing that they love, you're good to go, but sometimes it can be tricky to find the thing that they love.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned then as well, you use different balls to make a dog go faster. So I've seen in fly ball, sometimes a dog will run to the box slower than running back from the box, mm-hmm. or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
They'll run back to the hand, they'll run to the box quicker, mm-hmm. and then amble back to the handler. Mm-hmm. How would you go about increasing that drive,
so
either to or from the box?
So I don't ever teach drive to the box.
Okay, interesting.
I don't want stupid in speed, because that results in a crash at the box.
Mm-hmm.
So I always want to start with a nice controlled in, because then they can maintain their turn and they can mm-hmm. keep their brains together.
Yeah.
The in speed I allow to progress naturally.
Right.
I don't encourage that really at all. Driving back, generally they're ambling down the lanes because they're ball obsessed. So they've got a ball in their mouth, so happy days, done. Yeah. Done my job, come out of the lane at my own time.
Yeah.
So you want to get rid of the ball obsession.
Yeah. So how do you get rid of that? Because that can be a real problem, can't it, with dogs? And certainly we've got a dog on our team who is just ridiculously ball obsessed, and he will fly down that lane so quickly, very little control to the box. And we're trying to build in those props to get him controlled at the box, but he's going to get that ball, come what may,
yeah,
and then back into the runoff area. But he's got his ball then.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to go back to his handler,
yeah,
because he goes back to his handler. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What you got for me? Nothing. I've got it. Thanks. See you later.
Yeah, this is the game. So what would you recommend with a job like that?
The first thing I tend to do, is this is the beauty of the UKFL, is that don't, whatever ball it is they're obsessed with generally is a tennis ball.
Yeah.
A tennis ball does not get put in the box. Okay. You put a foam ball in, or a rabbit ball, or a chucket ball, or whatever, that is not a tennis ball. And mm-hmm. generally they go, if they spit it out in disgust, I'm like, yes, that's the ball we want to use. And yeah, then you've got to teach your dog to hold a ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because then you now have a spitting dog.
Yes.
So you have the complete opposite. But that dog will drive back. It will whore ass down that lane because you've now got a tennis ball in the back of the ring that it wants.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the general answer. I mean, there's lots of different techniques, but that's my sort of number one go-to.
Okay, yeah. So
put a non-tennis ball in the box.
Yeah. Or I guess a ball that they're not going to like.
A ball anywhere, they don't want, yeah.
Yeah.
And then teach them to hold it. And that becomes the challenge. It's teaching them to hold the ball.
Yeah, because you're almost swapping one problem yeah. for another problem, aren't you?
But I'd much rather have a spitter than a dog that's going headfirst into a box and
yes.
then ignoring its handler and not running back properly. And oh, that's, yeah.
Yeah. So how would you then teach a spitting dog? How what techniques would you use then with regards to dogs that spit?
So again, my sort of go-to technique is basically a duration hold, which I will back chain to teach. So I will start off with the ball in my hand and basically like a brand new dog. So for example, my youngest Quick, she knows how to take the ball out of the box, but at no point do we ask them to bring it all the way back until everything else is in place.
Oh, okay.
That's one of the last things that we teach is ball holding.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because if she does a really, really nice turn, but I'm asking her to hold the ball as well, and she doesn't hold the ball, and I'm like, nope, no reward.
She's
what yeah. is she being rewarded or not being rewarded for at this point? So again, so now she's ditching jumps when she's head-to-head, because obviously that's faster. So now I can nope, you're not having your reward. And she's thinking, oh, which bit did I do wrong? It's like, oh, it's the jumps.
Right.
So it needs to be like one thing at a time that you're tackling.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if you're asking them to bring the ball back early, there's like so many other things that you could be not rewarding them for. They don't necessarily know which one it is that they're being asked to do right. So yeah, so we do the ball holding last. And my general technique, yeah, is so I will have if it's a dog that's like not interested in balls at all, that wouldn't even pick up a ball, mm-hmm. hold ball in hand, and then you want a nose touch to the ball. And you reward that like a gazillion times until they're like killing themselves to touch this ball. You can move it around, mm-hmm. they're following and touching and click and treat, click and treat, click and treat. And then when they've done that really well and they're touching it and, you know, getting a bit frustrated, you then actually stop rewarding them for the touch and wait for a frustration move, which will be an open mouth. And then
okay.
you click that and then do a jackpot reward and then only click for something that involves the mouth. So they don't have to hold it, but just an open mouth will get a reward. Then you stop clicking that bit and then you ask them for a bit more of a grab and then put pressure on the ball. So basically you're teaching them to tug the ball and then have it there and then to my hand for the tug, and then you don't release it until I say yes.
Okay.
That's a quick version of it.
Yeah. I was going to say, I can imagine that with some dogs that's going to take
months.
Quite a long time
months,
of...
Yeah.
Very consistent
yeah,
training.
Depending on the dog and how much a dog likes or dislikes a ball, because some dogs just yeah. don't like balls, and that's when it becomes really difficult.
Yeah. And I guess as well, for that, you need the handler on side as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you've got to do homework. That is all on you. I can't really help you with that.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I will teach you what I've got. So I've got groups that pay per month groups, which I really don't advertise enough. Hey!
Oh, really?
There you go.
So what's that then? A paper month group? Is that a flyball chain?
Yeah, Dawes Paws Flyball Skills.
Oh, really?
So I've got Puppy Foundation, Intermediate and Advanced, and it's £20 or £25 a month to join.
Okay.
And there are literally how-to videos, the entire journey, and problem solving, and all sorts. So it's actually all in there. So for my lot, I just go, right, this is the group, tag them in the videos, watch this, do this, go home and do it, because I can't do this training. I can't.
Okay.
It's not something that I could, it's something you have to do every single day.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, we'll certainly put a link.
Oh, cool.
A link
Thanks.
To that
I'll send it to
within
you.
Our, within our social media.
Thanks.
Yeah, definitely. That's I mean, I'm
really bad at advertising myself.
But I guess for you, you get a lot of word of mouth, don't you? Because you're at a lot of shows, you're very successful, you know, until last week, the fastest.
I know, briefly.
Briefly, the fastest team.
Briefly, the fastest team in the UK, like, not ever, but yeah.
Yeah.
At the time.
At the time.
We were
and
number
I was a
one.
Judge for that as well, wasn't
you
I?
You were. When he was in the ring, I was like, oh, there's our lucky charm. Come on, we can do it. Nicky's in the ring. Let's do it. And I was like, that's not even
bad. No, it's not going to happen. No.
I think that was actually quite a rubbish one. I think our passes are all over the place for that one, but never mind.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're so experienced and everybody knows you. And, you know, very often, do you get people coming to you for training advice quite a lot?
A fair bit, not loads. But I hold workshops, here sometimes. Obviously, like, we've got the training barn at the farm now, so I do them there sometimes, but again, I don't do them that often. But for me, like, it's quite a balance, so
yeah.
I love flyball and I don't want it to be a constant thing where I'm constantly training, because I find it quite physically and mentally tiring.
Yeah.
So when I've like done a full day's workshop, which is like, I don't know, 8 hours or 10 hours or whatever it is,
yeah,
I'm really tired by the end of that day.
I'm not surprised.
And like, I know there are other people that do so many workshops. I don't know how they do it. I couldn't do it. It's
yeah.
just not for me. I don't want to be that much. I think it gets to the point where you'd be drained, and I don't ever want to feel that way.
Yeah.
So my workshops are occasional when I've got like, so I'm going down to Jets in June, but my family live in Portsmouth, so like they're 30 minutes away from the Jets show. So I'll go to the Jets on the Friday, spend the night with those guys, do a training seminar Saturday evening after racing, measure for them in the morning on the Sunday, and then go down to see my mum.
Nice.
And then go home on like Tuesday or whatever. So
you
that
can
works
tie
quite
it in
well
with
yeah.
other stuff. That, yeah. But it's a long way to go.
And it's nice training outdoor teams as well, because obviously you don't really get to see them very often.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a different perspective.
Yes. Yeah, because the dogs run very differently outdoor.
Yeah.
And I think indoor and outdoor racing, each one of those brings their own different training requirements.
Yes.
Doesn't it?
There is quite a lot of difference. I think the mats just provide that much more consistency, and I think it makes it easier for the dogs actually to take the jumps.
Yeah,
I think it's a clearer route for them.
Yeah,
whereas when I see jumps on grass now, it's just like, oh, it's so open. How did we train this?
With regards to the cross, though, you mentioned just mm-hmm. before on the race today that the crosses you thought were all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were actually all right, but, you know, that's besides the point. But how do you teach a new dog in flyball? How do you teach that cross?
So we have recently stolen someone else's training technique, which is what were Soul Tires, who are now Velocity, and we call the technique the Salty Pass.
Okay.
Because we saw it in a video and I was like, oh, I like that. So I did steal it, but and I named it after them, so it's all right.
There you go. At least you're giving them the credit for it.
So to try and explain it as best I can without showing you a video, is we will have obviously the box down and then 15 foot away, one jump, and then 6 foot away, gates, and then sending a dog at like 20 foot. Easy peasy one for a dog just coming out is you hold the dog at the box, release them, so they're just going over one jump through the gates to the handler with the toggy. So the handler's running in front of the dog, just a nice easy recall, but here's the dog here, and that's being sent to the box. So that dog is doing a pass through the gates.
Right.
So all he's doing is running.
Yeah.
He's running for a toggy. Nice and easy, nice simple one. Then when it gets a little bit more tricky is when they are doing start dog position. And so you are holding that dog at 20 foot, you've got another dog behind you.
Mm-hmm.
You send them, so they go through the gates, over one jump, box, back, and then there's another dog is about to go through. So the reason we do it short is, well, there's four jumps, it's 51 foot. That's an awful lot of effort and technique to be maintained with a young dog or a new dog. Whereas with just the one jump and the box, it's a lot shorter, so I can do more of them.
Yeah.
So it just means that I can do more reps of it, basically. And it doesn't need to be the entire full run and wear the dog out really quickly. It's more about keeping the brain fresh.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's what we do, and we call them salty passes.
Okay, there we go. So there we go, the salty pass. that's really interesting as well, because, like you say, you can get that repetition of the cross.
Yep.
So they'll do much more, many crosses rather than...
We could do 10 rather than just 5.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and you're doing five, and if you're doing four jumps to the box, the dogs are going to get much more tired, much quicker.
Technique's going to get sloppy, the passes are actually going to start being affected.
Yes.
So, it's a much cleaner way to do it.
Yeah, yeah. No, thank you for that. We may adopt the salty pass.
It's very good. I highly recommend.
We'll call it the stormy pass. what do you do? What's your feelings? Obviously, some dogs are natural chasers, especially a lot of the collies. You know, they have a big prey drive.
And the whippets, don't forget.
And the whippets, the sight hounds.
Chasey whippets.
Yes, chasey whippets. How do you turn a chaser into a racer then?
That for me mainly is about motivation, making sure that the dog is correctly motivated. And also doing your very, very best to prevent the dog from actually chasing. So we've still got chasers on our team. I mean, one of our worst chasers was is my dog, but James runs him on our Storm Chasers A team, Rage, the big ginger Kelpie whipper idiot who throws himself all over the place and spit flying everywhere. That's Rage. He was a horrendous chaser.
Okay.
Horrendous. We think we get him right. And then we put him in the ring and he just goes straight across. I'd be like,
oh no.
Oh my God, not again. Rage, what are you doing to me? we'd do it in training. We'd go to Hazel's place, Reva Hazel.
Yeah.
We'd train him against her dogs and switch lanes. We'd go to different venues and train and he'd be fine. And we're all making loads of noise and there's like a four dog, doing everything we can to replicate. But as soon as we got into the racing environment, he'd go, no, chasing.
Oh no.
And he never made contact with dogs or anything like that. He never got in the way. He rarely actually even went down the same jumps. He would sort of just go along the side of the ring.
Almost a bit like a cheerleader.
Just an absolute donut. And he was really hard work. But generally, so it is about making it easy enough for the dog to succeed. So if you've got one, there's a fair chance they're going to cross. I will have people in the middle and I'll have slats as arm extensions to shoo the dog away because I don't want you to go over there. That is not your business. You should not be in that area. But also, we don't shout at them. We don't tell them off. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because doing so, you're going to ruin their drive. If they're worried about getting told off, they're not going to go hell for leather and let go and run as fast as they possibly can because they're thinking about chasing. Oh, but I might get told off. Oh, and that's going to slow them down.
Yeah.
So we don't tell them off. We don't shout at them. We don't nothing. We do our very best to prevent them from actually doing it in the second place. But in the first place is making sure the handler is placed correctly, that they've got the right amount of motivation, and that you're not asking them to do something too difficult. So yesterday we're doing a bit of training after we finished setting up. And I had one of my young dogs against one of my older dogs. And he was doing extremely well, even to the point where, I mean, I say head to head, they were let go at the same time. She's 11 and he's like two.
Okay.
So obviously he got to the box before her and they were being let go at the same time, which is great. Really good for him. And then on one of them, the next one, I think she was accidentally let go a bit early and he went straight across and chased her.
Yeah.
But that's like, oh, okay. That's what's causing him to chase.
Yeah.
Is her being that bit ahead. So it's okay. We do head to head, head to head. Then we'll go a little bit early with that dog. Can you cope with that? Brilliant. Then we'll make it easy and put her behind.
Okay.
Then we'll go head to head again and then maybe put her just that same spot until basically it's like she's up that little bit earlier, but not too early that his head blows, and then make it easy again. So just bit by bit by bit, it's making sure the handler's correctly placed and the stooge dog is also really important where they're let go as well.
Yeah. Because I suppose for a trainer, it would be really easy to let the stooge dog go a bit earlier.
Yeah.
And then it works.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, that worked. Let them go a bit earlier again.
Yeah.
Oh, that worked. And keep doing that. But instead, what you then do is once they've done that positively, you then back right off with the stooge dog.
Yeah.
So they're then going, oh, right.
You're on a gas cooker here.
It's
they're going to blow at some point. If you keep them going, even if you think you're in it at the right melting point, if you like, they're going to go.
Yeah.
You've got to ease back off the gas.
Yeah.
And make it easy for them again.
Yeah.
And then just push them a little bit. But again, that all sort of depends on the dog and how chasey they are and what their motivation for chasing is and stuff. So
yeah.
But generally, that's my go-to.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you for that. You were saying about putting the handler in the right position.
Mm-hmm.
So again, is that a thing that what's easier to train then, the dog or the handler?
Oh God. Oh. Generally, I would say the handlers, because the majority, we don't tend to take on newbies anymore.
Okay.
That isn't a hard and fast rule.
Right.
That is just something that has happened recently. We have taken on newbies in the past. But a lot of the times, like, I'll spend an awful lot of time getting this dog to a certain point, and then 6 months later, they're not doing fly ball anymore. And I'm just like, oh, I've just put all so much effort into you, and you're not bothering.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know it might sound a bit snobbish or whatever, but we don't generally take on new people anymore. So, as a general rule, no, the handlers aren't that difficult to teach, because most of the handlers that come to us are already, to at least a fair degree, are experienced. But we'll still have handlers that come and can't pass.
Yeah.
So you've got to teach them to pass, but that's relatively easy. But yeah, the handling of the dog, they understand when I say stand here, reward here, move there, they know what I mean.
And if they've come to you, it's because they've seen the way you operate, they've seen you at competitions, they've seen you, yeah, in training, so you know that they're then committed.
And they're already going to be patient when I say your dog's not ready, or I want to take your dog backwards.
Yeah.
And I'll say that before they join, like, I'm not putting that dog into a team in the state that it's in. It needs to have some work, and we're talking potentially 6 months to a year of training before it will go back on the lanes.
Okay.
And if you don't like that, I'm sorry, but that's part of joining us.
Yeah, that's the way that you do, yeah, it. So, do you think there's a cut off age where dogs are too old to, yeah, start learning?
Yeah, I mean, probably. I probably wouldn't take one on that was past 6 years old. Because,
okay,
you're talking a good year of training before it's out.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, okay, you could sort of 7, 8, 9, 10. But at 7 years old, if this dog has been a pet dog all its life, it's not going to have the conditioning that a sport pet dog has had all its life. And so its career is going to be quite short. So, yeah, I'd probably say my cutoff for a non-flyballing dog is 6 years old.
Okay.
Because I just think it'd be a bit of a waste of time, really. You need, like, 5 years old to be pushing it.
Yeah.
It's the fitness.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's the condition of the dog, yep, isn't it? Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, so I think, yeah, I think at 7 years, at 6 years old, I'll be like, no, thanks, I'm okay.
Yeah, it's not worth my efforts now.
I do put a lot of effort in. I need to get out what I put in.
And that's it as well, isn't it? You know, you're putting all that effort in because you're going to get a good product at the end of it.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
Well, that's the aim.
Okay, so what do you love most about flyball then?
The adrenaline. I get an adrenaline rush from it.
Do you?
From like the racing the A team and stuff and getting those passes nailed.
Yeah.
It's and bringing out the goddamn ball. She's been so naughty today. I don't know why she's been so spitty.
Oh,
but yeah, I do. I do get a thrill out of it.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's so ridiculous. That's why I've got so many bloody dogs.
Yeah. So how many dogs have you got?
9.
Have you? Is that 9 between you and Daryl?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So who's a better handler than you or Daryl?
Really, Parsons probably Daryl.
Oh. Well, we can edit that.
Unless
out.
I'm running temper. I mean, I'm pretty good with tempo, but that's because she's so easy.
Oh,
she's
bless.
So little.
She is pitchy.
And she's going...
Bless her. And how did you feel running at Crufts this year?
Yeah, well, we did a lot better, didn't we, this year?
You
it was
did
really nice.
Amazing
third
this
was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It was really lovely. Just sort of say, yeah, we're not crap, we're all right.
You're not doing too bad. You're better than all right. Yeah. Pretty good, I'd say. On the flip side then, that's what you enjoy about flyball. What's the least favourite thing in flyball?
Probably when something's taken a long time to work, when it's like, I know this is going to work. I know it is, but it's dragging and I'm getting bored of doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So for example, Pixie, one of my Kelpie boots. So they were ready to go literally at the Easter 2020 was going to be their pre-cadet. And then COVID hit, 2 years of no training, blew their brains, and they've just been, her and Rage were really difficult to train. She's still in training, but I handed her over to Nick because I got so bored of the ball holding. She's doing really well. She's doing great. She is probably 99%. She's probably more successful than Tempo is now.
Oh, really?
But yeah, I just got so bored of playing the same game. My enthusiasm was like, yeah, good girl, well done. And Nick would be like, that's not enough. You need to give her more. And like, Nick's got the really cool squeaky voice, which Pixie absolutely loves.
Okay.
So I was just like, if honestly, can you? Because I'm so frustrated with the amount of spitting that she's doing. She doesn't like balls.
Right.
Pixie doesn't like balls.
Okay.
So she's been really difficult to teach ball hops. The hardest one I've ever trained.
So what do you use as her reward then?
She's on food at the moment.
Okay.
Because she absolutely loves a tuggy, but she will not hold a ball for, she will hold a ball for a tuggy, but she's a lot more likely to spit for a tuggy.
Okay.
And when she spits, she chases.
Oh, really?
Yes. So if we don't have the tuggy, chances are she won't spit, and so therefore she won't chase.
Right.
So it's a bit of a catch-22 with her. The tuggy hopefully will come back at some point.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's one of them. It's like, oops, I've spat. I'm not getting my reward. I'm going over that way.
Right, okay. So now you've worked out what makes her chase yeah. them, that you can then...
She knows she's not getting a tuggy. So she's like, oh, I'll sod that then. I'll go and chase the other dog instead.
Okay.
Brilliant.
They can be my tuggy.
Brilliant, yeah. Yeah. So yeah, so she's just on food at the moment, which right. involves, if you ever see Nick training her, Nick running around the ring, throwing treats everywhere with a really high-pitched, happy, happy voice that Pixie thinks is just the best thing ever.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, so Nick's her reward.
So yeah,
as well.
I was gonna say it's not just food actually, it's Nicole, because Nicole has all the enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Whereas I just got to the point where I was going, yeah, good girl, well done. And that's not enough.
Yeah. Pixie.
She needs like the moon and the stars, basically.
Oh, bless her.
Yeah.
And she's gorgeous, isn't she?
She's my little special girl, yeah.
She is.
My
she
little
is.
Wonky face princess.
Oh, she is gorgeous. She is so cute. Bless her.
Yeah.
So what's the one piece of advice then that you could give somebody that is new to fly ball then?
Don't rush.
Okay.
Don't rush your dog out. You're gonna be really tempted. See if you can run someone else's dog. If you're on a team, try and get running somebody else's dog that's already experienced, whereas you can learn to be a handler, and then you can take your time getting your own dog ready, because most new people go into a team, their dog will be rushed out because all they want to do is compete, and I get that, but you will not reap the rewards of having a safe turn, a fast dog, a dog with good technique, a dog with a good reward system. Mm-hmm. It will fall apart really quickly. So yeah, that would be my advice. Don't rush.
Okay.
Take your time. It takes ages, but just bear with it and you will get the rewards.
Trust the process.
Yeah.
Yeah, I say that all the time to my team members. Yeah. When they get a little bit disheartened and, oh, just trust the process.
Yeah.
The process will work.
Yeah.
And Adele, one of our handlers, came, she, you were right, Nikki.
Yeah.
I trust the process. I said, I know I've been saying it for like 12 months, but it's worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, don't rush. That's great bit of advice. Great bit of advice. Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
No, it's been absolute pleasure. And that we've been so looking forward to talking to you, because, you know, we look at you as some, you know, like a bit of a pedestal. I'm not,
oh God,
blowing sunshine or anything, but we do, you know, we always think, you know, if you need advice and stuff, come and speak to you. But yeah, we'll probably, if it's all right with you, come back again another time and have another chat
most
with you.
Most certainly, we can talk about more some than other welcome. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. I love talking flyball, love talking training, love talking dogs. So yeah.
Yeah. All and let us know that the link. So just say it again for anyone.
So
listening.
It's Doors, Paws, Flyball Skills. There's three groups. There's Puppy Foundations, Intermediate, and I think it was Advanced, the last one.
Awesome.
So yeah.
Brilliant.
Thanks.
Lovely.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
If you're interested in getting involved in flyball and to find out more about your local team, you can visit UK Flyball League on www.ukflyball.org.uk, or you could go onto the BFA website www.flyball.org.uk.
Follow us on Instagram, Facebook and TikTok at the Flying Dogs Podcast.